This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Kia ora koutou katoa. Welcome to the Global Rural Nursing Exchange Network's World Tour. Each month, we visit another country around the globe to bring together our global, rural and remote healthcare communities. We sample the local culture, get a feel for the place, the lives of ordinary people, and hear from health professionals about their lives looking after communities in rural areas. Your host is Samuel Mann from Aotearoa, Dunedin, New Zealand, professor in the College of Work-Based Learning from Otago Polytechnic, Te Pukenga, New Zealand.
Kia ora koutou katoa. Welcome to the Global Rural Nursing Exchange Network World Tour. Each month we are visiting another country around the globe to bring together our global, rural and remote healthcare communities. We want to sample the local culture, get a feel for the place, the people, the lives of ordinary people, and hear from people who are working to improve the health lives of people in their communities in rural areas. I'm Samuel Mann from Aotearoa, Dunedin, New Zealand. I am a professor in the College of Work-Based Learning from Otago Polytechnic in New Zealand. And today I am in Bishop's Castle in Shropshire in the UK, on the English and Welsh border. And my guide today is Keith Whiddon. He is the chair of the community group in Bishop's Castle, and he's a musician. He yesterday helped organise a gig in support of refugees, and he tells me that there was a COVID incident and so he ended up playing all night. So we are very grateful that he's managed to get out of bed and re-warm up the vocal cords and have a discussion today. Welcome, Keith.
Thank you. My voice is a little bit lower than it normally would be.
Where did you grow up, Keith?
I was a North Londoner, Enfield. And really funny, last night, the guy who was playing keys, who asked me to play, I didn't realise this until last night, he came from Enfield as well. And I think he sold me records in the record shop when I was young.
What led you to Bishop's Castle?
Okay, well, I lived down in Sussex and I was a school improvement officer for Surrey County Council for many years, ran a big team, and it was great. We were the result of government cuts. The government here changed at that point, and all the priorities in education that we've been working on for years changed. So the writing was on the wall and I was made redundant. And living down near London is expensive, and we decided to change lifestyle, really. It was early retirement, really. So we fell in love with Shropshire anyway. It's a really hidden little corner of the UK. And so we moved up here. So that's how we end up in Shropshire. So we've been here nearly 8 years now.
And you're involved in the community. What led you to that community involvement?
Well, that was one of the reasons we chose, actually, because where I lived down in Sussex, beautiful place, you know, we had a wetlands just below, it's stunning countryside. It was very busy being just south of London, but there was no community spirit. We lived in a village of something like 6,000 people, crazy size for a village. But it didn't have a centre, it didn't have a cohesiveness about it, and there wasn't really any form of community. So we wanted to go somewhere where we'd be at the centre of a community, and we picked Bishop's Castle because it's more about community than any other place I've ever been to. It's an amazing place.
And you live in a very old house.
Yeah, we had it dendrodated. We did a lot of work on it this year because it needed it. We had it dendrodated, and it's really interesting, actually. Some of the timbers in this house, the original timbers in this house, date from 1531 to 2, that winter they were felled. And the guy who came and did it is convinced, because he found scorch marks on the wood higher up, that it was built as an open hall. So it actually had a cellar and then a fire pit on top of the cellar, and then it was open to the roof with a hole in the roof. And then the timbers in our loft are later, they're Elizabethan, so that's when they put the roof on. So yeah, it's wow.
So tell us about Bishop's Castle.
Yeah, it is an amazing place. It's got a sort of reputation that goes far beyond it. That we had some Czechoslovakia, as was, students staying here a few years back, and they came with T-shirts which said Kotu, Bishop's Castle, Kotu. And it meant center of the universe. So it's a strange little place. It's where the hippies came sort of in the late 60s. It's on what we call the Welsh Marches, which is that borderland between Wales and England. And it's very rural. It's very off-grid. A lot of people live off-grid, make their own energy, that sort of stuff. And so it's got a sort of hippie-esque feel to it. It's got a slightly, tattiness to it, which is really nice. There's an honesty to it. But it's really important for music and art. I've never lived anywhere where there's so many musicians and artists in such a tiny little place, because our population is just 1,800 on paper, which is almost one of the smallest towns in the UK. And we're at about 800 feet above sea level. So we're also high up in the hills and very remote. You know, if you're going to get to the nearest town, it's 20 miles drive, either to Newtown, to Welshpool, to Ludlow, or to Shrewsbury. And there's only one bus, and that goes to Shrewsbury, and it only goes four times a day. So if you haven't got a car, you're pretty cut off in a place like this. And I think, actually, that's part of why this place pulls together as such an amazing community, where everyone knows everyone, looks after everyone. It's because we're remote. You know, it's very touristy here. We've got lots of visitors, but the population here are very solid together. It doesn't matter where you work, what age you are. I've never lived anywhere where I've got friends who are younger than my kids, and they're genuine, really strong friends. There's no ageism. There's no worrying about whether you earn much money or you haven't got a job. It's fabulous the way people come together on this. It's great.
And what sort of landscape do you have around
you? Stunning, Sam. It really is. I mean, just north of us, if I go up the hill behind the house here, which is quite a haul up, and look just across to the Welsh borders, we have South Shropshire Hills. So hills like the Stiperstones Ridge, Corndon Hill, and they're big. You know, they're sort of seriously rolling, beautiful hills. We're right on what's called Offa's Dyke, which is the sort of medieval border between Wales and England, and that's a really fantastic long-distance walk. So we're blessed. We really are. And, you know, during lockdown, because we couldn't travel to Wales, we couldn't travel very far from home, it made all of us really appreciate just what's literally on the doorstep here. It's stunning. Yeah.
If you follow down the line of that border, it's got a notch out of it where you are. What's the history of that?
It's got a notch out of it because I think it was a notch out of a lot of people at one time. Yeah, I mean, the borders were crazy because there were marauding, armies that came across and bashed them one another to bits. If you travel from here to Welshpool, say, you cross the border about six times. It's mad. That Welsh-English border is where it ended up. And Bishop's Castles came about because the Bishop of Hereford, which is quite a way south, owned the farmland around here. There's a beautiful sort of meeting of two valleys, which it's quite rich farmland in the day. You know, it's not so much now as pasture now, but in the day of the Bishop of Hereford, he grew a lot of crops, and he didn't want his crops nicked and ravaged by the Welsh, so he built a castle here. And there's castles all the way up the Welsh marches. So that's how the town came about. He needed people to make his castle work. And you talked about my house. Well, all the stone at the front of my house was robbed from that castle in the 1500s when it fell into decay. So there's nothing left of the castle except in people's houses.
So you mentioned that it's got an arts community. Does it have a farming community around it as well?
Yeah, absolutely. There's very traditional, what we tend to know as townsfolk, not being rude to them, but they're people who've sort of born and bred here, have a very strong accent. They mix very, very well, but they're the old farming stock. I don't think this is going to be broadcast in Bishop's Castle, so I'll say it. There's a bit of different thinking politically with those guys from the hippie side. So if you came to Bishop's Castle and didn't really know it, you think, hey, man, that's a really left-wing town. They're all green, and it's very green. And but probably the majority of people here would be very green. I mean, we vote in a liberal, but it's the nearest we can to being green here. But we had the wonderful Brexit vote, getting out of Europe, and it suddenly polarized bits of the town. So that old farming community, staunch Brexit. I don't understand why, because it didn't do them any good in terms of subsidies and all that sort of stuff. But it suddenly comes out of the woodwork. You've got an old an old established, rather right-wing traditionalist community within that. But everyone mixes. You know, it's only when things like Brexit polarizes that it comes out and it becomes nasty.
And what sort of age distribution do you have?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you know, I think it's amazing we've got a lot of young kids here who stay. I mean, I'm talking about young kids, I'm talking about people after school, because it's not easy here. And they want to be here and they want to come back and they make it work. They get lots of different jobs. But overall, if you look at the population profile, it is top heavy in terms of being 60 and over, as being, you know, quite high proportion. There's a lot of people who come to retire here. Hey. And it's a great place to do that. It is top heavy on the older group of people here.
What is the are there jobs for those young adults?
Yeah, I mean, people are incredibly creative. They take more than one job. So there are jobs in sort of tourist-related things, so the hotels and then cleaning, logs, that sort of stuff, the thing, the ancillary stuff to running tourism. We've got a very big wood mill here, timber mill, which is one of the biggest in Europe, and it's really automated, and it's absolutely incredible. And that employs quite a few people. But, you know, your biggest employers are the care homes here. We've got a lot of care homes, which sort of goes with having an aged population, I suppose. But saying that, there's hidden here is a lot of self-employment, people living off-grid, people doing some absolutely incredible jobs. Like one of the guys here is a jeweler, and he makes jewels for the Crown Jewels. And we've got people who make scenery for films and televisions, but you wouldn't know they're there. They just have their own little workshop and they get on with it.
And is English the primary language?
Oh, it's the only language, really. Yeah. I mean, the Welsh border is near, but no one speaks Welsh here.
And lastly, for my geographer's checklist, standard of living?
Unemployment. Employment is hard for people. Home ownership is great if you are retiring here, and people like me, the majority of people don't own their own, probably. It's very mixed, really, but standard of living, yeah, you've got all extremes. So I'll mention it in a minute, really, probably, but we opened a food bank during COVID, at the beginning of COVID. And a lot of people said, well, you know, a place like this, you know, look at all those people there, those posh houses, you don't need a food bank. At a town of 1,800 people, we have more than 100 people depending on that food bank now a week. So there's hidden poverty here, which is the real worry, actually. There's a lot of hidden poverty.
We are going to take the first of your music choices. We have a special treat today because it's you.
Oh, okay, good.
So we are playing As I Roved Out. Why this one?
Lockdown treat, I think. Just before lockdown, we'd gone to Crete on holiday and loved it. Hadn't been there for years. And I came across on the quayside in Hania, these guys playing this amazing instrument. And I'd heard of it before, but never really sat down and analysed it. It's called a lauto. It's the Cretan lute. And it's unique to Crete. It's massive. It's the lowest instrument you're going to find. You know, so it's a type of lute, loud. So type of lute. What blew me away is that it's tuned the same way that I play my bouzouki, and I couldn't believe that. So we went and visited all these guys who make them with a plan to go back the next year to pick one up. And of course, we never were able to get back because of COVID. So, but in the meantime, I'd commissioned this guy to make one. So he posted it to me. It was brilliant. It came all the way from Heraklion up to Athens and across to somewhere else. And you could trace it the whole way through, and it's immaculate. And so anyway, what I did was I wanted to play it on a piece. So Val and I did this piece. We were suddenly asked to do it for radio, called As I Roved Out, traditional piece, which we'd already done. And what I did was I added the lauto part of it. So the very deep stuff and the little solo in the middle has that Greek feel to it, I think.
As I roved out on a bright May morning to view the meadows and flowers gay, when who should I spy but my own fair lover, as she sat under me on a willow tree. I took off my hat and I did salute her. I did salute her most courageously. As she turned around, the tears fell from her, crying, "Fools, young man, you deluded me. A diamond ring I gave to you. A diamond ring to wear on your right hand, but the vows you made, love, you went and broke them, and married the lassie that has the land. If I married the lassie that has the land, my love, is that I'll rue until the day I die. When misfortune comes, sure no man can shun it. I was blindfolded, I'll not deny.
Keith, remembering that we are for an international audience, can you give us a bit of a 101 to the health system, I suppose, first in the UK and then how it works in Shropshire?
Yeah, I'll do my best. I mean, we are sort of funded at source, so it's sort of government funded, but it's paid for through national insurance that everyone pays. In principle, that's fantastic. So, you know, you don't have the need necessarily to have private insurance. It's on demand, you know, so everyone is catered for, except that successive governments haven't paid in enough to it, to be honest with you. There's some huge holes in the system. And it's quite sickening, really, because, you know, when lockdown started, they had this thing, you know, the government were trying to push, where everyone on Thursday night would go outside on their doorstep and clap for the NHS. And we had all these banners out saying, thank you, NHS workers, National Health Service workers. And that's great. But we come to the end of lockdown, and who's clapping for the NHS now? Because they've not had a pay increase. They've got pay cuts. There's the money's not going into it. MPs have given themselves a pay increase. And what have we done? Well, we've increased national insurance beginning of April to try and pay back all the money to keep the NHS, you know, the money it lost in terms of COVID. And that's crippling people, because by raising national insurance, you're hitting disproportionately some of the lowest earners. So I can't help getting into politics about this, because it's a brilliant system. The National Health, when it was established at the end of the Second World War, is amazing. And it, you know, everyone will tell you it's an international treasure. It's just, it's so sad to see it so badly funded. And that's what's so horrible about it. Here in Shropshire, we're remote. I think you knew this because you looked at the papers, I think, Sam. We have a hospital here, which is predominantly sort of respite care, looking for people, you know, old people, if they were in dire need, went there. It wasn't sort of an emergency type hospital, it was that hospital. But it suddenly closed. They said 3 days before they closed it, oh, it's a temporary closure because we can't staff it. But they didn't do any consultation with the trust locally, and they were deemed to be found that was illegal. And so we've got its future back again now because they acted badly on it. That gives you just sort of some idea of it, the sort of wing and a prayer that the National Health Service is like in places like Shropshire. Mental health is one that I'm passionately concerned about here, because we have TV campaigns about, you know, you must talk if you've got problems. It's really good to talk about your mental health. Everyone's got problems after COVID. But you talk and no one's listening because there's no one to talk to. there's no service. We haven't got mental health service here. It's now a phone line to somewhere, you know. And the doctors and all the practitioners are amazing and worn ragged, and we're falling apart. They're saying that the waiting list for elective surgery now could be 5 years. We've got something like, I don't know, it's something like 75% people, I can't remember the statistic now, I've got it somewhere, 75% people on waiting lists. It's gone crazy now in terms of the number of people waiting for minor surgery and that sort of idea. And it's really knocking onto people's health. It's really bad.
So would I expect to pay, do I pay when I go to the doctor?
No, it's all free. It's all paid for. Well, say that. I mean, if dentists don't come into that, then trying to find a dentist that will treat you on the National Health is pretty impossible. So you pretty much have to pay to go to a dentist. You have to join a private dentist practice, which is not right, because that stops people going to the dentist. But everything else pretty much is free at source. So you just bowl up at that accident emergency and get seen, you know, or whatever.
And medicines?
That you pay for your prescription. I can't remember what it is because I don't pay mine now because I'm of a certain age. I can't tell you what it is, but you pay for medicines, prescription charge, unless you've got a need. Yeah.
And do you have a surgery, a doctor's clinic, a nurse's clinic in Bishop's
Castle? Yeah, we've got
Bishop's
a brilliant doctor's surgery, medical practice in the castle, just around the corner from where I live, actually. It's really good. The guys are great. A lot of nurse practitioners there. So, you know, if you go and want to get a checkup, you usually get to see a nurse rather than a doctor. They are, after COVID, doing telephone consultations, things like that now as well. They've sort of moved into that. Yeah, it's great. They are brilliant. They do an amazing job.
You talked about some of the challenges of hidden poverty. What are the realities of health for people around Bishop's Castle?
Well, as I think I meant to you, you know, the issues of access to hospital. If you need more than the doctor can provide for you, so if you need A&E, you need an X-ray or something like that, you're going to have to get to Shrewsbury or Telford. Telford's pretty impossible to get to from here. It's really hard. It's about 30 miles. It's not an easy journey. Shrewsbury, the bus goes there, I think, 3 or 4 times a day. But basically, you need to drive there. And where we are, you know, it's horrible at the moment because everything is still so incredibly stretched. If you're having a heart attack, basically, you're better to get in your car and drive to Shrewsbury than call an ambulance, because you're going to get there quicker if you survive it. You know what I mean? It's down to that sort of really dodgy level, and people are dying because of that. And I'm not missing my words there. We are in quite a crisis in terms of healthcare. And in a place like this, it's very, very, very remote. So if there's an emergency accident here, we do have a helicopter. But if that helicopter's busy doing something else, you're going to die. You know, I mean, that'd be blunt, because by the time an ambulance will get here from Shrewsbury and then drive you back again, it's basically 3/4 of an hour journey each way. So that's part of the problem, the access to that healthcare from that point of view. I mentioned the mental health issues. So I'm a college governor, and we've got a fantastic counsellor who works at the college, and she was busy during COVID with kids having real anxiety issues. But it's got worse. She reckons now that about 75% of her pupils now want counselling for mental health issues. And we're talking about, you know, 11 to 16-year-olds. We're not talking about, you know, older. And she's got a waiting list till July to try and help some of those kids, because there's just too much demand. And it was COVID and lockdown, which was bad. But now it's worse in some ways, because there's more anxiety around. People are extremely worried here about Ukraine and the situation there. And the knock on that is the absolute chaos we're in terms of energy prices, cost of living mess that we're in. We're heading for a real serious problem here. And the problem is that the parents are passing that anxiety down to kids. And we've got a real problem here with young people really suffering from very serious anxiety. You know, they've had 2 years of their life really disrupted and really anxious about COVID. And now they've got their parents saying, I don't know how we're going to eat. I don't know how we're going to pay to have heating. And we're in real breadline stuff here. And it's not just what you might call working class. It's now hitting, it's going to hit the middle class. We've got a real, real problem. They're saying that we're now heading for the steepest drop in real terms income for more than 60 years. And we're expecting an increase in poverty never seen before in the UK. And it's coming this year, you know, and it's a perfect storm with Brexit, with COVID, and now Ukraine and the world energy prices, etc. So I'm more worried about this than I was about the effects of COVID itself, much, much more. So sorry, that knocks on to healthcare, but it really is, it underlines some of the problems we've got.
That 75% is a serious number.
It's horrible. It's really horrible. And it's that is the sort of hidden stuff, isn't it? It's parents not realising they're putting that angst onto their kids. And the kids haven't been mixing as much as they were. But I mean, I don't know what you do. I don't know what you do to support kids like that, apart from do things like we did yesterday, where we get them come up and play and just be part of the community. So that our view on it is getting them involved in things, getting them to feel self-worth, to not, you know, dwell on the real worries, but to actually get out there and do some work, dig the land, do whatever, you know.
You mentioned before about the food bank, and I think we've talked in other places about the community garden. Are there issues about food and connected to health?
I know Daphne Ducrow has, Daphne decided that let's move somewhere where we can actually practice what we preach. And her husband bought a bit of land and she opened a market garden. And it's amazing. She employs people, etc. And we've been working as a town on what the effects of Brexit might be on local food, because it is very worrying. And so she alerted us to a lot of worries about the international, you know, food things. And when we had the beginning of Brexit, there were food shortages here and it was a panic. We're now moving on and doing a really important food resilience strategy as part of our climate action. And it is brilliant. And she's also been asked to do the climate, the food resilience strategy for the whole of Shropshire, which is a real accolade for her. But we've also opened a seed bank, which is great, so that we're now trying to get people, and it's really successful. She's got freezers at the farm and we're storing seed. We're giving out, we spent the other evening in the pub making packets of basic seeds for people now, you know, some peas, some beans, you know, some lettuce, all those sorts of things. Go out and farm, because we're very, very worried about the lack of food that's coming, the lack of fresh food. So the food bank is great for supporting people, but some of the food we have to say isn't the best, you know, it's not the healthiest, and people are tending to buy things that aren't the best and healthiest because they don't necessarily know how to cook vegetables and whatever. So Daphne's been providing fresh veg, but we're now trying to provide seeds with the food bank so they go and grow their own and get them and understanding how to do that. What we're trying to do as part of a project to develop a community hub here, with my fingers crossed on some funding and some change of ownership of a building, we want to open a new venue for the food bank that's permanent in an old building that needs restoring, so we need a grant. But as part of that food bank, we want to build a community larder. We already take food waste from our local little shops and supermarkets, but it's mainly bread waste. It's things that is not perishable in the same way vegetables are. What we want to do is have a community larder where we can take fresher produce and supplement people's food bank parcels with some really fresh food, and maybe have a scheme where people pay in, say, a fiver and get £20 worth of nutritionally balanced food, and that sort of idea.
You're talking about positive community actions there. Are you seeing that played out at sort of a policy level? Are you seeing well-being at that policy?
What I will tell you is that we have an amazing thing here, which it's funded at the moment as you get the feeling it's funded as a trial. But Shropshire, to their credit, who are in the red, they haven't got any money at all as a council. Shropshire have actually gone for this, and it's I don't know whether you're aware of it. There, it's called social prescribing. It's something like 25%, 30% of people who turn up at a doctor's surgery don't really need medical advice. They've got underlying issues which are causing maybe a medical problem. But at the root of it, they're lonely, they're lacking self-worth. It's those sorts of things. And a social prescriber will work with those really vulnerable people in many cases and try and prescribe activities that will help them in their well-being. So it could be something basic like, you know, you're lonely, but you like singing. So they'll put you in touch with a local choir and get you to join the local choir. Or it could be more, you know, you want to get involved with an environmental project and go out and build something or whatever, you know. So that's how the social prescribing works. And I think it's absolutely brilliant. And it's the philosophy of that has formed what we're trying to do in terms of trying to help people in town. It's about helping well-being by being feeling part of your community, being active on community projects, working as a team with people. And it's so powerful. And we're very fortunate because Hope Robson, who's one of our key members, she's 24, and bless her, she became a social prescribing advisor for Shropshire about a year and a half back. And she's brilliant. And so in terms of sort of formulating our response to how you help people and their well-being in the community has been basically a social prescribing model. And it really works.
Let's take the second of your music choices. It's you again. What have we got this time? So Far Away. Why this one?
Oh, yeah, okay. My partner and I, Val, we play in a duo, and it's we play Irish music, and that's what we do. She plays concertina, I play bouzouki, so we call ourselves Bouzatina. A weird name, but in this particular lineup, we like doing songs that other people don't really cover, that Val sort of has in her back pocket from enjoying them from years back. So this is a Carole King number from the Tapestry album, which is very seldom heard, and I love playing on the bouzouki. So for me, it's brilliant because I can play more jazzy stuff than I normally would do, which would be the folky stuff, the other track you heard. Yeah, it goes down really well, actually, I have to say. And we're getting quite busy this summer with festivals and that stuff. So that's a sort of an example of what we do. Listening to the Global Rural Nursing Exchange Network's World Tour. We are in Shropshire in Bishop's Castle with Keith Whiddon. Keith, I realise that you're not a nurse, but what can you tell me about rural nursing in Shropshire? Gosh, I don't think I'm the right one to ask, really. Sam, I don't know an awful lot of what goes on in rural nursing. I think it's probably the training. I think it's different from the way you guys train your nurses in terms of it's less community. I think, we have the medical practice and we have nurses in that medical practice and we have sort of district, I don't know what they're called now, basically carers who go out and they look at people and help people. We also have some counsellors around, but it's thin on the ground here. That's something I can tell you. It's certainly thin on the ground. So I'm not sure I can say much more about it.
That's all right. You're not a nurse, but you are active in the community. What's your proudest moment in that role?
Okay, well, when I moved to the town, where I've been before, I was chair of community partnership, which a partnership like that is between a town council. Town council in the UK has statutory duties, so you're elected onto a town council, and those statutory duties are really exciting. They're things like passing planning permission because someone wants to put up a shed. You know, it's nitty-gritty, mundane, but it needs doing, or sorting out the drains, or, you know, that sort of stuff, you know, if there are issues. I'd been foolishly, I'd said to people that I'd helped with a community town plan in my previous place where I'd lived. And they were doing that at the time here, and I suddenly found I was in charge of writing or helping to write the community-led town plan here when I'd only been here about 2 years. It's a great way to learn the community, and you go out and engage with everyone and so on. So that was good because it's basically highlights all the issues that the community feels need sorting. And I said to the town council at the time, I don't want that to sit on the shelf as a document done, tick. That now needs to happen. We need to have actions like that. This form needs to form a huge plan. There needs to be people doing it. And they didn't get it at first, but fair play in the end. They understood that what we wanted to do was set up this partnership. Community partnership is between the town council and ourselves. We're set up as an association, a sort of unofficial charity. If we raise more money, then we'll become a proper charity. But we can bid for things that town council can't bid because they're statutory. And what we do is, I sound awful on this, but I feel we're the strategic arm of the town council because it's a bit like leadership and management. Management is the sort of nitty-gritty doing stuff, and that's the town council, and that's fine, and it's brilliant. But they don't have any capacity because they're doing stuff like that to look at the wider picture very much. Our role is the strategic side, the leadership side. I don't mean that in a patronising way over the town council, but we set a direction and we get out and do stuff to try and address the issues. And by and large, it works really well. We've got a town council now that gets it. And we're planning something in summer, which I'm hoping is going to be incredibly exciting, a community celebration day for the whole day. And what we're going to do is we're running, there's going to be no talks. We're going to run it like a trade convention where all the projects that are in the community, which are, some of them are hidden, some of them are amazing, all the societies, the clubs, the festivals, all the agencies who work with people in the community are going to come together. They can all have a stand. And it'll be like a massive trade convention. They can show off what they're doing. It'll be a showcase. We're going to get music in. We're going to get entertainment for kids. It's in its early days yet. But all that makes me really proud because it all comes out of me really pushing about the need for this community partnership. And, you know, everyone says we're the best kept secret in town because not a lot of people know about what we do, but they do see the impact what we do. And when we write a report at the end of each year about all the projects that we've helped to instigate, or we coordinate, or we just want to find out about, we put it into this one report, and it's mind-blowing the stuff that goes on, and just doing that is worth it.
What's the goal of that community partnership? What are you trying to achieve?
We're trying to address the issues and problems that the community have perceived. I mean, and then they're pretty obvious problems, I think, and some of them are not very easy to solve. Things like housing, employment. We're also now in charge in that of the climate action plan for the town, which the town council has signed up to. So it's a whole wide range of things, and then there's an awful lot of environmental projects in there as well. So we're doing a rewilding project, trying to grow things in bits of Bishop's Castle that never had anything grown on, you know, it's that sort of stuff. And then that's really fantastic in terms of the community, getting them involved. So it is very broad, but it's trying to address those community issues.
Some of those things have taken a long time to develop.
Yeah.
So are probably going to take a long time to fix.
Yeah, well, we did the original plan, it was too long ago. We did it about 6 or 7 years ago. COVID came along and blew two years out of it, really. Because normally what we'd have done 5 years, go back to the community, refresh. So part of our community celebration day is to refresh that plan. To be honest with you, we're not going to do a major refresh. We're going to say to people, look, this day shows you what's been happening to address your issues. What issues are we missing? Are we still on the ball? You know, are they still the issues you want us? Are there anything out? Is there anything else? What are we missing? So I think our refresh will be like that rather than a massive great let's start again, because none of those issues have gone away yet. They're all still really pertinent. And now we've got things happening to address them. So I don't think there's any need in completely throwing it out and starting again, but we might be missing things. And that's the key.
Given that those things are long-term, I mean, you're not going to turn around housing shortages in a couple of years. How do you stay, how do you keep people motivated in that? Is it about those celebrating the small wins?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, Sam. You know, you can't do anything about housing. Well, except over a long period of time, things happen. So one of the things that's happened here, we've also done a neighbourhood development plan, and that is a statutory thing, which is looking at where anything to do with planning, official planning, takes place. You can set as a town where you want things to be developed that need planning permission. And normally housing is sort of left out of that because it's done usually at a regional level. But we've gone and stuck our necks out here because the council, Shropshire Council, have been trying to build houses on a bit of land that we really don't want them to build on because it's in the wrong bit of town. It's going to mess up the traffic flow. It's on a bit of countryside, which is gorgeous. There are better places to build. So we've gone and stuck our neck out and said, no, you're not going to build it there. We've earmarked where it's going to be, and we've taken that responsibility on as a town. And so, you know, that is, in a sense, not helping the housing crisis, but it's involving in it. But we do have in town, one thing we're working on strongly is a community land trust who are very active. And the idea is to take over buildings which are in decay, falling down, whatever, and convert them into homes for not just what we call affordable homes, but someone who might be in desperate need for somewhere to live for 6 months, a young person, maybe. And so it's done on need in terms of that. And we're working on this project to make a community hub. We in the last year, managed to acquire what was an old newsagent's right in the centre of town. It's in a hell of a state physically, but we're going to get it refurbished. It's all moving forward, and it will make two really nice flats, which will be let on this affordable basis on need. So people probably won't live there for very long, but it helps. It helps the really vulnerable, because there are kids here, you know, 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds who are sofa surfing in this. Again, very hidden, but we can't have that in this day and age. Just not on. We need to have people secure.
As everyone is aware, we've been living in this global pandemic over the past couple of years, and you've talked about the impact of that on mental health. How has it changed the community?
Yeah, I mean, it. We were talking about it last night, actually. There's musicians who in the town who are fantastic musicians, you know, absolutely world-class. And I was talking to one of them the other night, and he said he hadn't played the guitar for over a year, and he's not minded to do it for a while. So personally, it's affected people, and people are really very much still reeling from it a bit, you know. A lot of people still not sure where they are. So musically, we're not like we were, but we're going to get there. And yesterday, I think the celebration thing we did, well, the benefit for Ukraine refugees, it is a good testament to that. In terms of the art and that side of it, great. The community is not broken, but it's slightly bruised. But I think I said to you, Sam, I know, you know, you're talking about COVID, but we've sort of put that to bed now. You know, COVID is everywhere here. It's worse than it's been, and people are going down with it left, right, and centre. But, you know, we're just getting on with it. What's much, much, much more worrying here, and it probably doesn't affect you guys, maybe in New Zealand, I don't know. But the war in Ukraine is seriously bad news here. I mean, it's bad news for Ukraine, don't get me wrong. But alongside that, this energy crisis, electricity, energy bills have gone up 60% this month, 60%. And they're going to go up again in October. That's crippling for everyone. I mean, not just poor people. And it's breadline stuff for poor people. That's food poverty for poor people, because what you do. Inflation rate's 6% now, which I, you know, she's like, what? But they're likely to go up to 10% this year. 10% interest rates. What's that going to do for this country? Fuel prices. I mean, the panic about getting diesel here at the moment. You see the fuel prices go up. And in a place like Bishop's Castle, which is remote and depending on transport, it's unaffordable, you know. We can't get heating oil at the moment. I'm really, 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 really worried about what's going to happen in the next 6 months here, much more than I was worried about the impact of COVID. We've got Brexit, which is causing labour shortages. We're in serious crisis. They're trying to prioritise food coming into the country because they're worried about food imports at the moment. And all this is every day, bang, bang, bang. And it's anxiety for people, but it's real. And I really worry about people being in absolute dire needs in the next months in this country. And I'm not holding back on that. You know, you've only got to look at the newspapers to see that. And I don't know what we do about it. I really don't know what we do about it. It's horrendous. And I don't know whether it affects New Zealand in that way, but my God, it's going to be dire here.
You can see that things like the festival, the music festivals and things, and the community gardens and that sort of thing, they're not window dressing.
No.
But they are important in terms of that, giving something positive, a nugget of positive to hang on to.
The only thing we can do, really, yeah. Yeah. So the other thing we're doing, which I'm very proud of, although it's not totally live, is that we won a grant a year ago, Hope and I bid, from a charity called the Cameron Grant Memorial Trust. Cameron Grant, young kid, he was 21, he committed suicide. No one knew he had depression. He didn't tell anyone. And it just leaves people in pieces when that happens. And anyway, they put a grant out a year or so back during lockdown for innovative ways to try and support mental health and community well-being. And so what we've put together is a Moodle platform. And we're working with the community to develop this. We had a brilliant meeting with the doctors, with the mental health coordinators and counsellors to quality assure the mental health aspects of our platform, because I'm no mental health expert, and they're really excited about it. We're going to roll this somehow out to everyone in the community. So they'll have a login, their own login. The login will give them their own personal blog space, which is their web space. If they publish things to anyone in the world, everyone in town's got their own web page, which is fabulous. We're using it, hopefully, as a community calendar where we've got all the project groups. So I mentioned the Rewilding Project. We're calling it Go Wild in Bishop's Castle. They have their own part of Moodle, and they're developing their little bit. If they've got a call out, they want some volunteers, they can put it in the calendar, and it's on the global calendar there for everyone to see. We've got the Seed Bank on there. We've got a fantastic project working with Dementia Friendly, is a project, and a befriending group there for trying to help lonely older people. All those projects are in there, and we just need a lot more time and a lot more development to get them more exciting before we can roll it to people to get them to use it. But I've never been more excited about a project in terms of having an impact on the community, because when you show it to people, they go, wow, you know, we could use it for this. And you suddenly, your idea is sparking around. So at the moment, it's under wraps in terms of people being able to use it. But all the people we're talking to, we're going to talk to the town council about it next week. They're really excited. And, you know, fingers crossed, that's going to do an awful lot to help people get in touch with projects and so on. So it's a virtual community hub. Now, I don't like the word hub, but that's effectively what it is.
Working on the basis that the community will get through the next few months, what do you think is the future of healthcare, of well-being in rural Shropshire?
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest problems we've got in the UK is, and again, it's probably historic, but social care and the traditional health care of it are quite uncoordinated. And I think that's one of the biggest problems. And I don't see this government really, frankly, doing anything to solve that. So I don't know is the answer on that one. I think, you know, it's a really, really, really difficult challenge here. It's a bit like, you know, the housing issue. What can you do to help housing in the town? What can you do to help, say, mental health in the town? Well, you can't rely on the National Health Service unless you've got a dire, absolute critical need. You know, you're going to commit suicide tomorrow or whatever. You know, what we can do is what we're doing in terms of trying to help community health and well-being by engaging with people and getting them out there and getting them going. I don't know what else we can do, to be honest with you, at the moment, because we are a national system, you know. It's a really hard one.
Keith, I have some questions to end the show with. The purpose of the World Tour is to foster conversations and understandings between rural nurses globally. What's the primary thing you would like those international nurses to know about healthcare in rural Shropshire?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've got a brilliant system here in what we have as the National Health Service. And I know when we've worked with New Zealand nurse students before, it took them a little while to get their head around the fact that I can bowl up at the doctor's surgery, no, I don't have to pay, I just make an appointment, or I can go to accident emergency and get seen to, I might have to wait a bit, but you know, that's amazing. And as a system, it's helped us through COVID. It's crippled, it's broken the system, really. In terms of the rural area, you know, while we've got that amazing system, you know, you're vulnerable here if you've got transport problems and you can't get to a hospital. You're vulnerable here if you've got mental health problems. And I think people need to be aware of that, because it, on the face of it, it sounds like we've got an amazing system here, but it's a thin cover. I don't know anyone who's got private healthcare other than people who've got private healthcare as part of their job. So when I worked for accounts, I had what's called Bupa membership, you know, some private thing alongside that. But I don't know anyone, I honestly, genuinely don't know anyone anyone's got private healthcare off their own volition, apart from it came with my job. And so we're all dependent on National Health Service, and certainly in a place like this. And so really I just worry very much about vulnerable people with mental health issues, with physical health issues in a place like this. And it's I just don't think there is community healthcare other than the fantastic work the doctors do and the people who come out of care homes and that sort of stuff. We're suffering here really from that. I think it's very, very difficult. It's probably quite different in other community areas, in rural areas. It's probably a damn sight better than we have it here. It's not just where we live either. My son suffers from mental health issues right through COVID. It's been horrible, and being remote from him, and also how do you help a kid go through this? Somebody's in his 30s. And he's had absolutely appalling lack of treatment, I mean, it's all I can call it, where he lives. And he lives in Surrey, a really populated, affluent part of the UK. And if you can't get support for mental health in a place like that, and that, it's just really, 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 really worrying. So I feel a bit like a doom and gloom merchant, Sam, because I think when we've spoken before, I've been quite upbeat about the way we're getting through COVID and everything else. But I just see things getting much, 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 much worse post-COVID than they ever were before. And in terms of rural health, it's part of that. It's worrying.
What might surprise those international nurses if they spent a week working in your shoes, other than having to learn to play several musical instruments?
I don't know. I think your first impression would be, this is an amazing place. It's gorgeous. It's fantastic. It looks wonderful. And you just don't see what's under the surface, perhaps, And I think that I think is the scary thing here, that a lot of what I've talked about with mental health, with physical problems, isolation, is hidden. And so for me, I bounce from one meeting to another with all sorts of weird projects, and there's a huge amount of excitement about some of the stuff we're doing. And so I think we're not stopped by any of this. In fact, it drives you to do things more, because you could, you're in a tiny, tiny little fish in a massive great pond. What effect can I have on global warming? What effect can I have on mental health conditions across the country? And, if you did that, you'd never go anywhere, would you? You'd never do anything. But you can all do something. And I think that is what the people I work with make me happy. I work with seriously wonderful people of all ages here. And it's such a can-do thing. It's not the sort of, oh, God, we might give up, and it's depressing. They just think, well, let's how about doing that? And they come up with such amazingly wacky ideas. So I don't know whether that answers your question, Sam, but yeah, it's such a creative place in terms of not just the art and music, but also the thinking and the caring for one another in a place like this. We sort of do have the philosophy, all of us really, like, well, blow the rest of the world, we'll just put a wall around it and we'll get on with our own thing here. It's got that sort of frontier town feel.
Nurses are often described as everyday heroes, and I'm sure we can extend that description to you. What's your superpower?
Oh my God. I don't know. A few years ago, I said it's 3X. That's the beer they sell down the road. I've got the brewery just here. It's one of the oldest licensed breweries in the country. I don't drink much beer now, to be honest with you. I know it looked like I probably do, but I don't know. I tell you what it is. It's working with people. So I mentioned Hope, who's 24. It's working with people like her who just cajole you. They make you want to do things. So if you feel a bit, I can't be bothered, whatever like that, they've got enthusiasm. And I think we spark off one another. And that's my superpower. It's the other people around me who we work as a team. And it's just delightful.
If you could wave a magic wand and have a miracle occur tomorrow morning, what would you have happen?
Oh, God. Politics. I don't know. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I've been gobsmacked for the last 3 years about our government. How the hell did they get into power? How the hell did we get Brexit? They railroaded that through. How the hell did they do all the corruption they did through COVID, giving PPE contracts to their mates who didn't even make PPE? You look at this, and then you may have heard the sagas about parties during lockdown, which is froth, but it shows you the corruption. In my mind, and most people I know, and most most good-thinking people, we don't understand how the hell we've got this government, who are so appalling. We've got a Home Secretary who comes from a Ugandan refugee background from when that happened in Uganda, and now is trying to stop Ukrainian refugees coming into the country. I mean, everything is wrong, but they still get voted in. Possibly there's just no opposition. So to me, get rid of that structure, do something different because they're crippling our country. And I'm sorry it's political, because I'm not at heart really a political. I get so upset, and so we all do, just looking at this and feeling a stranger in your own country is horrible. And I don't get it. I really just don't get it. And I don't see any change, unfortunately. But boy, we could do with possibly your leader in a place like this. You may not feel that she's always done everything right, but we look across the waters and think, my God, we could do with someone who speaks a bit more honestly than we have. I don't know. That's not a nice way to end it, but that would be my magic wand, and it's a horrible one.
Well, lastly then, you can end positively. Any advice for our listeners?
Oh, God. You know, you just got to keep positive. That's all I can say, because, you know, I hate being doom and gloom. I have been on this one, but I really am worried. But there's no point sitting worrying, and you just got to get out and do things to move it forward, haven't you? Because what else can you do? That would be my philosophy. And go and enjoy yourself as well.
Thank you, Keith. Thank you for being our guide to Bishop's Castle and Shropshire. Thank you for joining us on this visit to Bishop's Castle in Shropshire in the UK. This show was first broadcast on Otago Access Radio, oar.org.nz, and is a collaboration between Otago Polytechnic and the Global Rural Nursing Exchange Network. The Global Rural Nursing Exchange Network's mission is to connect rural and remote nurses, nursing students, researchers, community activists and educators worldwide by fostering conversations and sharing resources. To hear more interviews from the world tour, including conversations with nurses from more countries, visit www.grnen.org. That was the Global Rural Nursing Exchange Network's world tour. Our guide today to rural Shropshire has been Keith Whiddon. I'm Samuel Mann in Aotearoa, New Zealand. We hope you enjoyed the show. Mati wā.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.